Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friends Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Michael Morris. It's just the two of us today, which is not our normal way for things on a Monday, but I think many of our colleagues are very busy trying to tie up all the loose ends as the year, end of the year is in sight. You can sort of taste it. I think our last episode this year will be on the 2nd or 3rd of December, somewhere around there. Anyway, Michael, very good to have you on the show. And once again, another Cape Town-dominated show today. Thanks for being on again.
Indeed, indeed. And always good to know that our colleagues are engaged in the great battle of ideas. We would love to have a third party involved today, but so much the better if they are fighting the good fight.
Indeed. Let's start off with what for me and my personal feelings is very much a self-indulgent kind of a story that amuses me to no end, and that is the latest update in the ongoing internal conflict. I think that's actually putting it far too mildly, inside the EFF, which doesn't seem to be getting any better. We've seen Busisiwe Mkhwebane leave the party. We've seen Dalian Mpofu leave the party. We've seen Floyd Shivambu leave the party. And Malema has been tweeting these sort of crazy, you know, sort of alluding to someone else as the next to go. And there are people among us who sing beautifully, but we are keeping an eye on them. Sort of all threatening, weird statements. And it looks like, as many suspected, it's clear who his next target is. And this is Mbuyiseni Ndlozi, who is a long-term spokesperson for the EFF and was the party's national spokesperson from 2013 to 2020. Ndlozi is favored by the anti-Malema people within the EFF to be the next, I think, deputy president of the EFF. However, the EFF's leadership around Julius Malema seems to prefer Godrick Gadi as to be the next one. Now, apparently, Ndlozi has not, according to the reporting in News 24, has not actually agreed to stand for any leadership position, but that hasn't stopped the EFF's leadership from freaking out a bit. Apparently, he's been banned from attending the EFF's next elective conference at the end of the year, or even though he's apparently not even a candidate. So much is the fear, it seems, that he would cause some sort of disruption just simply by his presence, that it seems like Malema doesn't even want him to be there. Ndlozi has apparently also been missing from recent high-level EFF meetings. They have their meeting of their central command team last week, where apparently he wasn't there. Sorry, it's City Press reporting, not News 24 reporting. He was removed from the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Trade, Industry, and Competition last month. So it very much looks like he's being scrubbed out of the party. Although, according to the anonymous sources in the EFF who was talking to the media, the Malema faction can't chuck him out yet because they don't actually have a reason, because he hasn't done anything that they can kind of say is bringing the party to disrepute or is worthy of discipline. Although, I mean, I don't think that's going to stop them. Apparently, Ndlozi wants to be thrown out rather than resign, although I don't know how long that'll last for. So, I mean, obviously, this is a pro-Ndlozi account we've had from within the EFF here. So there should be, I think, a little bit of a pinch of salt taken with the whole thing. But man, it's just, it's wild how sort of small and pathetic the EFF just looks right now. You know, what was once in many ways one of the most influential players in South African politics just seems to be disintegrating around the ego of Julius Malema. What do you make of this, Michael?
I mean, your last comment reminds me that for years now, maybe 10 years, when people have been constantly warning about the EFF, not unreasonably, I think the warnings have always been sound, because the EFF did represent or does represent a kind of politics which would not be welcome in South Africa and would not serve national interests, either of the elite and or the wealthy or the privileged or of the poor masses. But for a very long time, at the dinner parties and wherever people talk about the EFF in sort of anxious tones, I've always sort of made the point that I'm really not convinced that it has a future, that it's really going to be this great, significant, and frightening force that most people think it is, always destined to be, and even that it would you know, find common cause with what is essentially a fairly straight-laced middle-class ANC, despite its sort of revolutionary pretensions and rhetoric. So it comes as no surprise to me that the whole thing is kind of unraveling as the ground is sort of whipped away from under it. And I think the last election really, in a sense, did that. I think it reflects the party and just what's happened to it and its ideas. I think it is truly a reflection of the kind of paltry offering that the EFF has always, you know, presented to the South African electorate, South African society. And, you know, a fundamental distrust of freedom, I think, is also a key point to underline. This is an organization, you know, economic freedom fighters. They've even got this word freedom in their title. I don't think for a minute that economic freedom is really what they have in mind. And it just suggests a party that's kind of anxious, as you say. We're not entirely sure whether all the stuff that's been reported so far is completely correct. So that is a proviso, but a party that is anxious about who's attending election conferences, who's in line for, you know, leadership positions, who might be threatening the commander-in-chief, is a party that basically distrusts the idea of giving people the chance to say what they want, to choose, to elect, and so on. In our chat before the show, you referred to Julius Malema, you know, kind of petty, small, and unpleasant man. Well, I think this is his problem. And the flaw, the weakness, the ultimate weakness, I think, of the EFF is that he has managed to make his name synonymous with the EFF, and that the party is now attached to his fortunes, and his fortunes appear to be waning. I mean, this is the bald fact of it. Just looking at the photograph in the City Press, the piece that you're referring to, we have a picture of the two Julius Malema and Mbuyiseni Ndlozi, clever guy, but there he is with his beard, with quite a stern, contemplative expression, unsmiling. He looks the revolutionary part, whereas right next to him is this faintly smiling and faintly ill at ease Julius Malema. And it's quite a striking image, actually, of exactly the vulnerability both of Malema himself and of the party that he's kind of crafted in his name. And Ndlozi here looks very much like the obvious revolutionary. And then the final point, maybe, is just to say that this party and all the stuff that's going on also represents a kind of fundamental, I think, misreading of the South African zeitgeist and how we are and who we are as South Africans. We're not especially revolutionary. We don't trust all these kinds of wild and extreme promises. we've kind of lived through extremities and we know exactly what they look like. It always comes at a cost. We all kind of get on. We try to. We make a point of doing it. We know the resentments, but we're very familiar, and we know that, you know, we keep pushing through. Sometimes things like the Springbok cricket team or Springbok rugby team, rather, represents for us what the country could be. And I think that's very much the kind of metaphorical background to all of this, that we're not really the kind of society that wants to tear things apart. We want to try and build and make the most of what we know is valuable. So there we go. I mean, that's quite a long and rambling answer, but I think, yeah, I think quite a significant story, if true, that, you know, if this fellow Ndlozi, who I think is very clever, I think typically the EFF has tended to attract smart people, well-educated people, a lot of their supporters, I think, better educated than most other parties. Young students, middle class even. So I think he's a clever guy, and that must present itself as quite a risk to Julius Malema.
So this is kind of what I wanted to talk about next is, you know, what replaces the EFF. So I completely agree. Our polling and the polling of basically anyone who's asked these questions shows that South Africans are pretty middle of the road, pretty sort of conservative in the sense of the word, that they don't really like radicalism or change too much. I think, you know, South Africa is a pretty chaotic and violent place, and so a lot of South Africans are not really keen on that stuff because they, you know, they want to get away from it. They want to, you know, retreat to somewhere that's a little bit more safe and secure and stable. And that's everyone from the poorest to the richest. But the EFF still do represent a strand in our politics that goes from anywhere, depending on how you measure it, from sort of 5% to 25% of South Africans. This kind of radical left, rejectionist, deconstructionist, student this, undermine the systems that revolutionary feeling. And I think together with MK, who also wins over some of those voters, they do represent a real sort of strand in South African politics. So I suspect there always will be something like an MK or an EFF in South Africa as politics. Who knows how big it will be? I don't think it'll ever be more than about sort of a quarter of voters or parliament. But I think the real question now is what exactly is going to replace the EFF if it does continue to sort of bleed senior leaders. And it looks like MK will be that. But MK is a different beast. I mean, firstly, it's got a sort of different sort of geographical and kind of social and ethnic basis. The EFF is very much focused in Northwest miners from the Platinum Belt and paddy speakers from Western Limpopo. That's kind of their stomping ground. And then also people in townships, particularly in Gauteng. Whereas, of course, MK does have some of those same people, particularly some sort of anti-ANC township voters, but it also is mostly focused in KZN and Southern Mpumalanga. And it's not the same. It doesn't have that same sort of focus on education. I mean, I was talking to an MP recently, and he was just saying, you know, the EFF, you know, yes, they're full of a lot of bad ideas and bullshit and posturing, but they also really did dive into the mechanics of Marxist that or Fanonist that, or there was an intellectualism in that party. And I don't think all of that's going to flow directly into MK. I mean, I think they'll get some of those people from the EFF, but it really doesn't seem to me like MK is anything like the same kind of creature that the EFF was, even though it occupies that same space in our politics in a lot of ways. And Michael, I don't know what your thoughts are. I mean, you know, do you think MK can fully absorb the EFF? Are they gonna, can there be peace between those two parties? I mean, at the beginning, right after the election, they were very happy to work together and support each other. And in Parliament, they still do that from time to time. But man, that relationship did not last long.
And I think you're absolutely right to flag the potential risk, much greater risk actually, of populism as opposed to, you know, extreme left politics. I've often thought that, you know, for liberals, if they weren't a sort of left or right opposition to us, we'd have to invent it, because that is really part of what the liberal proposition is. It's a vivid argument between ideas. You need to have that argument. You need to be demonstrating your willingness and ability to contest things and to find the best answers for the moment by contestation and argument and sharing of ideas, and then to be able to ditch them also and to move on. So for that, you need a kind of dynamic politics, and you need contestation, people disagreeing with you, and so on. The trouble, I think, often with the EFF was especially that it tended to relate that sort of ideas market with race, and that became nasty, just simply nasty and brutal and brutish and very base, actually, in the original English sense, not in the current, not in the parlance of the social media. Basic, I suppose, is what I want to say. So, I mean, the you know, the risk of a party like MK managing to capture those areas of discontent, maybe in the South African politics, and corral them into, or corral it into a more populist and ethnically driven and a kind of politics, could be quite nasty. We don't need that. We've had that too, I think, in our past. So we you know, South Africans, we are aware of the things that don't work, and yet they are often are quite appealing. It is, you know, these things do offer an appeal to people who are in dire straits, desperately wanting some kind of change in their lives. I was just thinking quite recently, or maybe even this morning actually, of our former boss Frans Cronier's comment a little earlier this year that the greatest risk to the GNU is that it becomes perceived as a kind of elite thing. It's an elite deal that's going to benefit top end investors and people like us living in pleasant houses in the suburbs. And that actually, that would be a failure if it's perceived merely as a benefit to that part of society. It's got to be seen to be a good thing for everybody and for the masses and the millions of people who are poor and want a better life. So that body of people are out there. They're looking for, watching politics closely. They're hearing what the politicians are saying. They're hearing what we're saying. You know, this is all a great thing, but if it doesn't register in their lives as a wonderful thing, they're going to be available to alternative appeals. So I think you're absolutely right. I can't see, I think you're right there, that the EFF would naturally translate into the MK. They're two very different things. But the risk is that the one kind of extremism feeds into another. So that will have to be watched. And I think the only way to counter it really is for the GNU to be alive to this and to show its accountability to people, show that it is actually really genuinely interested in answering these desperate questions and pleas from the populace, which have been by and large they've by and large turned a deaf ear to over the past 30 years.
No, definitely. Of course, the other problem with MK is that it very much suffers in some ways the same problems as the EFF. In fact, more so in some cases, it's quite dysfunctional internally. It has sort of infighting. It's a one-man band in a lot of ways, and that Zuma sort of dominates the party's identity in a way that the ANC and the DA don't suffer from. Of course, it's also possible that some of these elements have always been a strong voice within the ANC. It remains to be seen whether the ANC will manage to rid themselves of that kind of revolutionary tendency and revitalize the party, or whether they will sort of stay split between those who live in reality and those who want to set everything on fire. Okay, Michael, we've gone a bit long on that one, so I'll let you choose our next topic. Do you want to do the Bella Act stuff, or do you want to do the Joburg Civic Center stuff?
Well, maybe we go from one to the next, because there's a kind of continuum, as there so often is with news in South Africa. I mean, news reflects the society, and that's what we're looking at. So maybe looking at the Bella Act and the kinds of ideas that appear to be emerging about how we do government now and how we tackle these difficult things, and the contradictions, maybe the tensions that arise.
Okay, as anyone watching the show and following the news has seen, the Bella Bill has been pretty contentious, particularly clauses, I think it's 4 and 5, which grant a lot of power over schools to provincial administrators rather than leaving them with the school governing boards. This is concerns mostly admissions policy and language policy at various schools. Now, there's been a lot of opposition to that, and the many of the parties in the Government of National Unity who are not the ANC are not super happy, particularly the DA and the Freedom Front Plus, with the Bella Bill for various different reasons. Some of it is fear that this will be exclusively used to target Afrikaans language schools to get rid of them. There's also fears that this will just centralize power in provincial administrators and therefore would create even more dysfunction in our education system, or that would allow sort of schools that are functional to just become kind of dumping grounds for people who can't, there'll be many ways for provincial administrators essentially to just punish schools they don't like It could cause all sorts of dysfunction. So there's lots of opposition to this bill. When President Ramaphosa signed it, he agreed that he would suspend the implementation of clauses 4 and 5, pending some sort of compromise that could be reached within the government of national unity with regards to this by sort of December. So that's been ongoing behind the scenes in the government of national unity. And there's been this clearinghouse mechanism which has been set up to essentially, particularly between the DA and ANC, although all the GNU partners are involved, to discuss complaints, issues, things that are tearing that, you know, very fractious coalition apart. Apparently, at a meeting of the National Working Committee of the ANC this week, Paul Mashatile clashed with Minister in the Presidency, Natasha Verney, as well as Nomvula Mokonyane, for over this issue. Mashatile said that the ANC no longer has a majority and we have to listen to the grievances raised by our partners in the government of national unity, according to reporting on this stuff. Mashatile is actually the chairman of the clearinghouse. And I think, you know, he's been seen in some ways as sort of an opponent or a potential opponent of the GNU. So it's interesting to sort of see that he seems to be defending the thing that, you know, because the DA, for example, has said that it might leave the GNU if the Bella Bill's implemented full force. Mpulo Makanyane and the Minister in the Presidency retorted that this act was passed by Parliament, including the contentious clauses, and therefore it was the will of the South African people and had to be pushed forward so that deracialization and decolonization of the education system could be achieved. A ANC leader who spoke anonymously to the newspaper, but I strongly suspect is either Mokonyane or the Minister in the Presidency, said, quote, "If we cower on this thing, it will mean we have no intention of promoting integration, of decolonizing and deracializing the education system. If we cower on such an issue, what about the decolonization of the entire education system?" So decolonization is one of those sort of ideological buzzwords that you kind of have a vague sense of what it means, but it often isn't very specific as to what exactly it means. But usually it seems to mean some sort of racialization or focus on race, among other things, when it comes to policy. So, Michael, what do you make of this one?
I mean, there's quite a lot here. I think just to focus on, or just to begin by talking about that very last point, decolonization. You know, there's an obvious sort of irony here and contradiction, maybe, in the idea that what you're doing is putting pressure on schools that have whose parents have chosen Afrikaans as their language, which is Africa's youngest indigenous language, spoken by people right across the board, and you are going to advance the interests of English in effect, which is, if anything, it was the great vehicle of colonialism and ideas and everything from the Bible to football rules to telegraph to you name it, written language, history, and protests.
Exactly.
And opposition and left-wing ideas and Karl Marx, it all came in this dreadful colonial instrument of the English language. So there's an irony there, and it's really crappy to be crude, I'm afraid. It's any way to express it, a crappy way of her really, I think, whoever this is, making excuses for the fact that the society actually hasn't been transformed nearly enough in 30 years, and that what they're really trying to do is to try and force schools and other similar institutions to create this patina or impression of transformation, when in fact what the society really wants, what South Africans really want, is to be a transformed society. People want better lives. And once you've got better lives, the schools are going to change. The schools are going to have to change, because that's going to be the middle class, and it's going to be powerful and assertive. There's going to be no way of turning a blind eye to it, but that's how it happens. That's real change. That's harder. And it's something that we've very by and large kind of put off. There've been many advantages, obviously many gains made since 94, in 1994, with the extension of the vote to the whole population and the dignity and all the rest of it that goes with that. But practically, in socioeconomic terms, everything else had still to be begun at that point, more or less. I mean, there were changes before that. The society itself, in fact, led the changes. We're ahead of the National Party even. But there was so much more that could have been done. There were huge advances, as we've written before many times, in the early administrations of the ANC. And then they stalled. And they stalled. Exactly, exactly. And they stalled for the very reasons that are somehow encapsulated in these sorts of phrases, decolonizing and deracializing the education system. That in fact is not the problem. The problem is a society that remains in so many ways untransformed and unchanged, and people being trapped in socioeconomic circumstances, right, not of their choosing and not a result of their race either, or of anyone else's race. They're not yeah, white people compelling black people to live those lives. Blackness does not compel them to live those lives. It's simply the economic and policy environment in which we're living.
Right, our problem is not entrenched hierarchical structures of like shadowy people
exactly,
segregating the population behind the scenes. The problem is that people in this country are overwhelmingly poor and that the education system doesn't teach them the things they need to know. Those are the problems.
Yeah. Yeah,
but fixing those problems, it requires treading on the toes of special interest groups and interrupting the things. I mean, the fact that Nomvula Makonyane still has a career after all of those revelations in the Gupta stuff is just kind of incredible. But anyway, very briefly, let's just quickly go over the Joburg Civic Center question. So a while ago, the Johannesburg Civic Center, where the sort of city is previously had its offices, this is the sort of bureaucratic heart of the city of Johannesburg, had to be abandoned due to safety concerns, particularly relating to the potential for fire, because the building's maintenance had deteriorated so badly. And there were 48,000 staff members working in that building. Most of them are now working from home. Others are working at offices that belong to the Johannesburg Property Company. And recently, the Joburg speaker and some Action SA people went on a tour with the media of the Joburg Civic Center and just the state that it's fallen into, homeless people living in it, parts of the ceilings collapsing, oil and fire risks in places, just a total disintegration of the building. There's the fact that this thing is going to cost, according to the estimates the city has done, about between 800 million to a billion rand to renovate and repair the building. They've also suggested that maybe it's just worth demolishing the whole thing and replacing it with a new fancy building for the cost of 2.2 billion rand. And this is just so symptomatic of the chaos that Joburg has fallen into, particularly over the last couple of years. Michael, just any quick thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's sadly that we are so familiar with this, aren't we? I mean, the ordinary people of South Africa see this over and over again, been writing letters to the newspapers, the parties have been raising it, the institutions like the IRR have been talking about it all the time. If you allow things to start getting out of control to that level, it develops a momentum of its own, and the consequences are always hugely costly. So this is a tragic reflection of a very much "I told you so" kind of case, but there it is.
I grew up in Joburg. I lived there my whole life, and I even served in the city administration. I went around those offices when I was a councillor, and it's sad to see my hometown just sort of collapse into this state, one that unfortunately I think only the voters can fix, if they hold their officials to account and make the changes when the next local government elections come. It's not a surefire way to fix things, but it's a pretty good one. Anyway, very briefly, last story for today. South Africa, the American ambassador, Ruben Bryty, American ambassador to South Africa, Ruben Bryty, has announced his resignation in terms of the fact that he was appointed by the Biden administration. And now that Trump has won the election, he's going to be stepping down so that Trump can appoint a replacement. He said in his statement, quote, U.S. ambassadors serve at the pleasure of the president, and with the recent election in the U.S., the U.S. people have expressed their choice for the future direction of our country, reflecting our shared commitment to democratic principles. That his resignation will take place on the day of Trump's inauguration, quote, in accordance with standard procedure during a change of presidential administration. Now, the ANC was not a particularly big fan of Bryty after he accused them of essentially doing some sort of deal with the Russians, possibly relating to weapons, on a ship called the Lady R, which docked in Simonstown, and according to U.S. intelligence, transferred weapons, or there was some sort of transfer of weapon. The ANC denied this. There's been a committee that found that this didn't happen, but this very definitely strained relations between SA and the U.S. Bryty, I think, was very much for that reason not liked by the ANC. I don't think they had a particularly good view of him. However, it's probably not going to get any better for them. The Trump administration, in my opinion, is not very likely to appoint someone who's going to be more amenable to the ANC's view of the world. In fact, considering their sort of anti-Israel stuff they've been doing on the world stage, I wouldn't be surprised if the Trump administration appoints someone very pro-Israel simply to annoy the ANC. Michael, any thoughts on this one before we close up for today?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, we were chatting earlier. Just on the one hand, it's a wonderful advertisement for democratic free societies that, you know, the ambassador announces so far in advance he serves at the pleasure of the president, the sitting president. The U.S. people have expressed their choice for the future direction of our country, reflecting our shared commitment to democratic principles. And then he's on the way. So, on the one hand, very, very healthy and pleasant advertisement to be putting out into the world. But I agree with you. I mean, who knows who's going to be coming here? But this could only actually be good for South Africa, I think. You know, to have to sing for its supper, account for itself. It could be an uncomfortable experience, I think, for some. But I'm sure we'll all be better for it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, hopefully the Americans take, I think, a little bit more of a tough approach towards South Africa, and you try to push it to a line more in ways that will actually benefit the country rather than just sort of being as it's been for the last 10 years or so of kind of talking revolutionary on the world stage while impoverishing its own people, which is, you know, been a great horror to witness. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much again, Michael, for being on the show today with me, and we hope that everyone enjoyed. We will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone, and see you.